Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Five Democratic presidential candidates will come together in Las Vegas tonight for their first nationally televised debate. The debate starts at 5:30, and it'll be moderated by CNN's Anderson Cooper. The five candidates are Hillary Clinton, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, former Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley, former Rhode Island Governor Lincoln Chafee, and former Virginia Senator Jim Webb. So on today's Your Call, we are spending the hour talking about the Democratic presidential race. What stands out for you so far? Where do candidates stand on key issues like U.S. foreign policy, immigration, race relations, labor rights, and the economy? And who are their major backers? Today, we are joined by David Sirota, an award-winning journalist, TV commentator, and senior editor for investigations at the International Business Times. David was just named editor-in-chief of IBT's Political Capital, a new money in politics reporting project. Hi, David. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks. Thanks so much for having me.
Great to have you. We're also joined by Peter Dreyer, professor of politics and chair of the Urban and Environmental Policy Department at Occidental College. Peter's most recent book is The 100 Greatest Americans of the 20th Century, a Social Justice Hall of Fame. Hi, Peter. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Rose.
Great to have you. And we want to hear from you. What do you make of the Democratic race so far? How has Senator Bernie Sanders' successful campaign changed the race? Hillary Clinton recently expressed her opposition to both the Keystone XL pipeline and the Trans-Pacific Partnership after saying she was in support of it many, many times in the past. So we'll talk about that. And according to a recent Google consumer survey, Democrats say they want to hear about income inequality and jobs and the economy. They hope that a lot of questions will tackle those issues tonight. So what do you want to hear from the nominees tonight? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. So, David, let's start off with you. I'm willing to bet that most people probably couldn't name the other three candidates who are going to be on stage tonight. And there's been a lot of people are criticizing the process because back in 2008, there were 26 debates. The first Democratic debate was held in April 2007. By this post in the cycle, there had already been 13 debates. And Harvard Law Professor Lawrence Lessig, who's been on the show a couple of times, is really criticizing this. He has raised $1 million. His main issue is to get money out of politics. And he didn't make the cut, so he's not going to be on stage tonight. What do you think of the process so far?
Well, I think it's clear that the Clinton campaign wants to have as few debates as possible, and the Democratic establishment has worked hard to reduce the number of debates from previous years, likely because the party tends to see contested primaries as something that's bad for its general election prospects, even though history doesn't really necessarily bear that out. So I think there's an attempt to try to tamp down the contest, even though, let's be clear, the contest to date, even though there haven't been debates, has been pretty vigorous, although it also has been pretty positive. Bernie Sanders has refrained from personally attacking or criticizing Hillary Clinton, and Hillary Clinton has barely mentioned Bernie Sanders. So it's been a pretty civil contest so far. I think the question, though, for a lot of voters is whether it's been a small D Democratic contest. That is to say, whether there has been enough of a support for official debates in which the candidates actually are on stage with each other debating the merits of their policy proposals. And I think that criticism and those questions about that will only intensify, assuming that the polls remain as close as they are.
And Peter, what about you? What are your thoughts on the process so far?
Well, you know, 6 months ago, Bernie Sanders' campaign was a quixotic crusade, but now it's a real campaign with a shot at winning both the nomination and perhaps even the presidency. And I think Bernie himself is surprised at how well he's doing, and certainly the Clinton folks are surprised at how well he's doing. And as a result of that, they're nervous. And one way, as David said, they're expressing their their nervousness is to try to keep the number of debates between Bernie and Hillary as few as possible, because Sanders is a great debater. If you watch him on the Senate floor during hearings, he's quite skilled at debating. And Hillary is okay, but not great at debating. And so I think the surprise factor in all this will be whether any of the other three candidates say anything meaningful or anything memorable, you know, kind of like, you know, I knew John Kennedy and you know John Kennedy kind of statement. And so if that doesn't happen, then it seems to me that those three other candidates will quickly disappear. They won't be able to raise money. They won't be able to get crowds. And it'll become a one-on-one fight between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. And then the big elephant in the room will be, will Joe Biden enter the race?
Right. Well, and so since you brought up Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, and we want to really talk about issues this hour, but for a little bit of insider baseball, the New York Times had a really interesting piece about a month ago, and a lot of Democrats, establishment Democrats, spoke off the record saying that his success has really taken her campaign by surprise. And during the email scandal, and David, you've been writing about this, the contents of the email, which haven't gotten much attention, a lot of Hillary Clinton supporters are fearful that she might not win. And because the Democratic establishment is not interested in Bernie Sanders at all, they do not like his policies. And so some insiders told the New York Times that Hillary's people were getting so desperate that they were even thinking about asking Al Gore or John Kerry to run again. And a lot of people are saying that's why they're putting the pressure on Joe Biden. David, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I certainly think that the traditional Democratic insiders and establishment folks are uncomfortable with the idea of Bernie Sanders as the party's presidential nominee. I think they're uncomfortable with it for two reasons. I think, one, there are policy disagreements between a Democratic establishment that has relied on massive corporate funding for its lifeblood for many years. I think that those folks are not comfortable with policies promoted by Bernie Sanders, which challenge the policies that come out of a politics of money. I think the Democratic Party officials are also concerned about the supposed electability of Bernie Sanders. The concern being that him having said that he is a democratic socialist, him being from a small liberal state, makes him a less electable candidate than Hillary Clinton. What I find confusing about the latter argument that you hear from these folks is that it's not as if there's a lot of evidence that Hillary Clinton has a strong electability numbers in the polls. Hillary Clinton's unfavorables are extremely high. There really isn't much empirical evidence that she is more electable than Bernie Sanders, or frankly, any of the other candidates. So I think the latter argument that Bernie Sanders is a less electable candidate than Hillary Clinton is not necessarily borne out by the data, which then comes back to the question of, well, why is that argument being made? And I think it's based on presumptions that a candidate who proposes policies that are not moderate, but more appeasing of the corporate powers that be, the presumption is that makes a candidate more electable, but the polls don't necessarily bear that out.
Right. Well, and if you look at how many people are showing up for Bernie Sanders rallies, but 2 months ago, the media were barely covering him, but they sort of are now forced to cover him because he has raised $26 million. The average donation's about $30. And he actually has raised more this time than President Obama did when he ran for office at this time. What are your thoughts on that, Peter?
Well, it's absolutely true that Sanders' campaign is far ahead of where Obama was 8 years ago. His crowds are bigger. He's raised more money. His poll numbers are better. And he's gotten money from something like 750,000 people, mostly in moderate and small-sized donations. So clearly, people that were writing off Obama at this time 8 years ago and saying he didn't have a chance to win because Hillary was the clear front runner have to swallow a little bit and say, well, is the same thing happening now? And the other thing I think it's important to point out is that, you know, there are two Democratic parties, or there are two wings of the Democratic Party. There's the progressive wing, includes labor groups and feminist groups and environmental groups and gay rights groups and so forth, and civil rights organizations. And then there's the corporate Wall Street wing of the Democratic Party. Hillary straddles both wings, as did Obama to some extent. And Sanders is clearly on the progressive wing of the party. And the big question, if he wins the nomination, that David kind of raised, is if Sanders wins the nomination, which is a possibility, what will the corporate wing of the Democratic Party do? Will they they're mostly moderate to liberal Democrats, but they have their self-interest as Wall Street and business folks. Will they stick with the Democratic nominee, with Sanders, and hope that he wins and hope that they can moderate some of his views, or with a Republican Congress, make sure that he doesn't get what he wants? Or will they move over to Rubio or Trump or Kasich or Bush or whoever the Republican nominee is? And I think that's a big question. And the person I'm thinking of to illustrate this is someone like Robert Rubin, you know, a Wall Street banker, a Clinton cabinet member, a liberal in many ways, but not on corporate issues. Would someone like him stick with Bernie Sanders, or would they go with the Republican? And I think that's a question that, you know, we won't be able to answer until after the conventions and who we see is being nominated.
So you're talking about members of the Democratic establishment, household names to those of us who follow politics closely. You think they might actually support a Republican over Bernie Sanders?
I don't think they will, but you know, if you look at the campaign contributions of the corporate class, you know, they're mostly to Republicans, but there is a huge wing of the Democratic Party that Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, and Barack Obama have relied upon to raise money for their campaigns, and they're beholden to them. And what will those folks do if Bernie Sanders, a socialist, is nominated? Bob Kuttner had an article in the American Prospect this week on the website that said that Bernie Sanders is no more radical than Harry Truman.
Mm.
And I wrote an article in The Prospect a couple of months ago that looked at public opinion polls and showed that Bernie Sanders is totally in sync with public opinion. For the vast majority of Americans, 74% think corporations have too much influence. 74% think that we need tougher regulations on Wall Street. 79% think that the wealthy don't pay their fair share of taxes. 85% favor paid family leave and so forth. So Bernie is tapping into where the vast majority of Americans, not just Democrats, but independents and even some Republicans are.
Right.
But he's got to be able to fund his campaign to get that message across, not only between now and August in the convention, but if he wins the nomination.
Well, so you brought up a couple things there. So talking about money, David, you were just named editor-in-chief of the International Business Times Political Capital. This is a new money and politics reporting project. Over the weekend, the New York Times had this incredible expose looking at the 158 families that have given $176 million to presidential candidates so far. So this is just 158 families giving nearly half of the early money. The New York Times reports they're overwhelmingly white, rich, older, and male. 138 of those 158 families support Republicans, and the other 20 support Hillary Clinton, all giving her either $1 million or less. Some of these families are giving people like Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, Jeb Bush, like 11 or 12 million. Hillary Clinton's getting $1 million or less. And the piece pointed out that some of those same people are also giving to Jeb Bush and the Republicans. So they'll basically go with the wind. Whoever, you know, gets the nomination and they believe will back the policies that they back, they'll give them the money.
So, well, look, I mean, I think those stats that you recount are proof that really, in a lot of ways, that American politics is less divided by the parties than it is by money. There's a money party, and then there's a non-money party. And the money party, in many cases, doesn't care where the money goes. It just wants to back a winner. I think that, you know, clearly we have a situation in the post-Citizens United world where a small handful of people provide the vast majority of funding to political candidates, by the way, not just presidential candidates, but also congressional candidates and the like. And this speaks to what at least some of the candidates are bringing up in terms of who controls politics and who doesn't. And I think this is why even Hillary Clinton, who was a beneficiary of some of this money, has said that she would like to overturn Citizens United. Obviously, Bernie Sanders has talked a lot about money in politics. Larry Lessig has based his entire campaign on dealing with money in politics. The problem is, ultimately, that to get a message out contesting the influence of money in politics requires money in politics. So, in other words, you have a situation in which to promote a campaign to get money out of politics, you actually need money, which is why I think the Sanders campaign, in how it is currently dealing with fundraising through a huge number of small donors, is at least holding up the possibility of a different model of funding campaigns. But there's a cautionary note. When we compare the amount of money that Sanders has raised to the amount of money that Barack Obama has raised at the same time during President Obama or then Senator Obama's successful presidential campaign in 2008, what's missing from that analysis is that Barack Obama went on to raise an enormous amount of money from huge money donors.
Right.
That while there is this mythology that Barack Obama's first and second presidential campaigns were funded primarily by small donors, that's simply not true. He got certainly a huge number of small donors, but a very large portion of his money, I don't have the exact stat in front of me, but it was a pretty sizable portion of his money was from big money, the traditional big money donors. And I don't think that kind of money, at least in the primary, will be available to Bernie Sanders in the way that it was for Barack Obama when he ran in the primary. And I think that's because Bernie Sanders is promoting an agenda that is far more confrontational against big money donors and big money forces than Barack Obama ever was.
And Bernie Sanders, again, has raised about $26 million. Hillary Clinton has raised $75 million. And today on Your Call, we are talking about the Democratic race so far. Five presidential candidates will come together in Las Vegas tonight for their first debate. Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, former Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley, former Rhode Island Governor Lincoln Chafee, and former Virginia Senator Jim Webb. And we just got an email from Rob. Please mention where the debate tonight will be carried on the radio. Thank you for this email, Rob. So if you live in the Bay Area, it's KSFOAM, KGOAM, and KKSFAM. And we will put a link on yourcallradio.org so you can find out where you can hear the debate. Also, it's pretty easy. I usually am able to find it online. If you just search for live stream the debate, you can probably also find that, and we'll put links at yourcallradio.org. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. I think Progress just posted an article called Media Outlets Want You to Know the Democratic Debate Will Be Boring Because It Will Actually Focus on Policy. The Washington Post reports that while the Republican debates have been appointment television, the Democratic debate will probably focus on issues, which means that you will be, quote, bored senseless. So, I mean, even the way that the media are framing this, I want to talk to both of you about that in just a couple minutes. What questions do you have? What questions would you like to see asked tonight? What do you think of the race so far? 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Ruby in Mill Valley. Hi, Ruby. Welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning. Thank you. In the first place, regarding the number of debates, is it not because of Debbie Wasserman? She has a hyphenated name.
Schultz. Wasserman Schultz.
Yes,
yeah.
Thank you. She made the unilateral decision, did she not, to make it just six debates? And no one else had any word on that. She just decided. And she's a Clinton supporter, I believe. So perhaps it was inspired by that. And you'll correct me if I'm wrong. And then also, my question is to your guests, how would you run the perfect campaign? What would you like to see in a perfect campaign for your candidate? If you had a candidate and you were that manager, what would you want the debates to be about, the personality, the policy, or how well you play with others? Your ability to actually work within our system, because this is it. We ain't going to be changing our system for decades, we'll never see any significant change in two parties and et cetera. You know, how legislation is passed, mm-hmm. how it's vetoed, you know, what the Supreme Court does, you know, et cetera. So which of those or in what order would you like to see your candidate presented with questions?
All right. Thank you, Ruby. And you're right. Last month, Debbie Wasserman Schultz is the Democratic National Committee chair, and she was heckled at an event in New Hampshire last month by crowds calling for more debates. And Hillary Clinton has declined to call for more debates. Bernie Sanders says he wants more debates. So, Peter, what are your thoughts? How do you think this debate system should actually work?
Well, I think the debate system itself is a good one in the sense that the public gets to see the candidates facing off. But, of course, if you have 15 candidates talking or 12 or whatever in the Republican debate, then they don't get to say very much. And if it's Fox News asking the questions, then they don't get to say very much meaningful. So I'm hoping that the questions tonight will be about policy. And the debate so far, the campaign so far in the Democratic campaigns have been very civil. As David said, Bernie Sanders and Hillary have both refused to do negative ads. That'll change ultimately if it gets if it heats up. But you know, last week on Meet the Press, Bernie Sanders was asked, "Are you a socialist? You still call yourself a socialist?" He says, "Yes." He said, but then he said, "Why don't the the people at the debates ask the other candidates or during press conferences, are you a capitalist?" And I think that even though that might sound like a joke, it's absolutely the case that Bernie Sanders and Hillary are looking at, reflect different versions of what capitalism should be like. Bernie Sanders wants America to be more like Scandinavia, more even like Canada, in terms of higher taxes on the very rich, a broader social safety net, more government spending for job creation, free public higher education, and so forth. And Hillary Clinton is inching in that direction, but she's basically into a more kind of responsible capitalism, not Republican capitalism. And so what this debate and what this campaign is helping the American people see is that there are different versions of capitalism, and that Bernie Sanders, even though he calls himself a socialist, is really a social democrat. And he says that, basically. So he prefers Sweden and Finland and Denmark to kind of fundamentalist capitalism. And Hillary Clinton is sort of straddling both sides because she can't quite decide where she is. And like I said before, she represents both the corporate and the progressive wing of the Democratic Party. And so I'd like to see this debate ask some fundamental questions about the tax system, the social welfare system, why we have so much wealth and yet so much poverty, big questions like that. And I think if those are the questions that get posed, then the American people will see that despite the fact that this campaign so far has been very polite, there are significant differences between the two major candidates in the Democratic Party.
And that is Peter Dreyer. He's professor of politics and chair of the Urban and Environmental Policy Department at Occidental College. His most recent book is The 100 Greatest Americans of the 20th Century, a Social Justice Hall of Fame. David Sirota is senior editor for investigations at the International Business Times. He was just named editor-in-chief of IBT's Political Capital, a new money in politics reporting project. They do really good reporting on these issues. And we'd love to hear from you. Tonight is the first Democratic presidential debate. Five candidates will be on stage: Hillary Clinton, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, former Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley, former Rhode Island Governor Lincoln Chafee, and former Virginia Senator Jim Webb. Lawrence Lessig, Harvard professor who has raised $1 million to get money out of politics, has been criticizing the debates because he has not been invited. So what are your thoughts? What questions do you have? What questions would you like asked tonight? This is your call. We'll be back after this.
You're hearing Your Call on KALW. There are many ways you can take part in the conversation on Your Call. On the phone, by sending an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org, or by going to the yourcallradio.org website. If you'd like to participate in today's show by phone, call toll-free 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. Coming up at 11 o'clock today, it's World Have Your Say from the BBC, and at noon, Philosophy Talk. Topic today is bioethics, myths, and realities. Is knowing about our genes necessarily a good thing? Philosophy Talk at noon here on KALW.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will speak with three of this year's Brower Youth Award winners. To date, 92 young people have been honored for their leadership and innovation, from saving the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta and working to green a high school, to campaigning for green spaces and urban gardens. This year's winners are creatively confronting major environmental issues. That is tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about tonight's Democratic presidential debate. It is at 5:30, and you can hear it in the Bay Area on KSFO, KGO, and KKSF. We will put links at yourcallradio.org. We're talking about this with Peter Dreyer, professor of politics and chair of the Urban and Environmental Policy Department at Occidental College. He's author of The 100 Greatest Americans of the 20th Century, a Social Justice Hall of Fame. David Sirota is senior editor for investigations at the International Business Times. He was just named editor-in-chief of IBT's Political Capital, a new money and politics reporting project. David, I wanted to ask you your thoughts on how the media are really framing the Democratic debate. I just got a furious email from a listener who thought that I was the one that was calling the debates boring. That's not what happened. Actually, I was quoting the Washington Post, and I bring this up because I think the media's coverage of these issues is so important. The Washington Post is basically saying, tonight they're going to talk about actual issues rather than during the Republican debate, the last moderator basically said, Jeb Bush, Donald Trump called you an idiot. What's your response? We're not going to get that tonight. And so therefore, the Washington Post says that you're going to be bored tonight. David, what are your thoughts about how the media is really framing the Democratic debate and these candidates?
Well, look, I think it's working journalists find it far easier to cover personality and the candidates' interactions with each other, not on substance. I think journalists find that just far more simple. Your candidate said something. What is the other candidate's response to that? Let's not check any of the facts. Let's not check any of the record, because doing that would require some actual work and some actual expertise. So I think that the media, as much as it builds itself as objective, actually has an inherent bias in terms of covering the campaigns and framing the campaign as a contest between personalities, and that bias is a bias to whatever is the easiest way to generate traffic, to generate ratings, without doing much of the hard legwork. I think that's unfortunate, but I also think that clearly there is excitement in the Democratic primary contest and excitement over policy debates. I mean, this is why somebody like Bernie Sanders is getting thousands and thousands of people out at his rallies. I think that there's plenty of evidence to suggest that there is excitement inside the Democratic Party among the rank and file and among Democratic voters, in spite of the way the media is framing this campaign. And so I actually believe that while the way the media frames the debate and the campaign as a whole is certainly an important factor, I think it is actually becoming a less significant factor than it has been in previous years, and that's due to a lot of things. I mean, you have a lot of new ways that the candidates can communicate with voters, directly communicate with them. There's a lot of ways for smaller media to communicate with voters, from talking about social media, Twitter, the Internet as a whole. And so I believe that the establishment legacy media may be comporting itself in the same way that it has in the past, which is to say presenting itself as the all-important force in framing the contest. But I actually think that the establishment legacy media has a lot less power to determine final outcomes. Doesn't mean it has no power, but I think that what we're seeing right now is that, again, in spite of the way much of the establishment legacy media has framed this campaign, the campaign is moving in directions, tackling issues, and generally creating a dynamic that the media, unlike in other eras, has been far less able to control.
Peter, do you agree with that? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that the way the media has been framing this is Hillary likable and is Bernie too extreme? That's basically their meme, their theme about this. And the media framing of Bernie being too extreme has persisted despite the fact that, as David said, he's doing so well both in the polls and in the crowds he's generating. And so I think tonight the debate is going to be about partly whether Bernie can present himself as someone who is not too extreme but has a bold vision for the country, and whether Hillary can prove that everybody knows she knows the policy issues, you know, whether she can come across as more likable, and also she can contest with Bernie one-on-one, which is, you know, hopefully what most of tonight will be about. You know, I think another question about tonight's debate is not whether it's boring, but who will be watching it, because there will be several baseball games on TV tonight, and I'm going to have to decide whether I'm going to record the Dodger game or whether I'm going to record the debate and watch one of them later, because they're on at the same time. And so I think that's a big issue. But despite that, this will be the first time that, I mean, everybody knows Hillary Clinton. Everybody has an opinion about her. She's been around in the American public eye for decades. Bernie Sanders is a relative newcomer in terms of being on the public stage for the vast majority of American people. This will be the first time that millions of Americans actually see him in action. It's kind of his debutante ball, and he's going to introduce himself to the American people. And so even though in general I agree with David that the debates may not have that big an impact overall, this first debate and some other ones, the next few, will determine whether or not Bernie Sanders can appear to be a viable candidate in terms of his issues and also his ability to take on, you know, the Clinton legacy, and to do so in a way that is positive, that says here's my vision for America, as opposed to personality-driven politics, as David said. I mean, you know, Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton are both interesting individuals, but what's important is whether or not their policies resonate with the American public.
So let's talk just a little bit about the issues. When you hear Bernie Sanders speak, he always talks about increasing taxes for the wealthy. He talks about breaking up the big banks, providing free public higher education for people who go to public institutions, health care for all. He's been criticized for not spending that much time on U.S. foreign policy, so I checked out his U.S. foreign policy. He calls it the War and Peace page. He writes that he's going to close Guantanamo, rein in the National Security Agency, abolish the use of torture, ensure that any military action we engage in has, quote, clear goals, is limited in scope. Not sure what that means. It'd be great if they asked questions about that tonight. Move away from a policy of unilateral military action and toward a policy of emphasizing diplomacy. He opposes the Keystone XL pipeline, opposes the Trans-Pacific Partnership. David, what else would you add?
Well, I mean, I you've covered a lot there. I mean, I certainly think that Wall Street regulation will probably be on the table tonight. Hillary Clinton has proposed recently a Wall Street reform package, which notably does not include reinstating the so-called Glass-Steagall Act, which was the act that separated banks' more speculative activities from their traditional banking services. This was a law that was put in place during the Great Depression, which her husband, Bill Clinton, repealed. And Hillary Clinton has steadfastly says that she is opposed to reinstating that law. So I expect that will come up. Bernie Sanders and the other candidates said that they support that. I think criminal justice will certainly come up. I think that there has been a question surrounding Bernie Sanders about whether he can adequately connect with people of color because he's from Vermont, which has very few minorities living in that state. However, I think that Bernie Sanders will likely stress his own voting record on civil rights issues and potentially contrast it with Hillary Clinton's. I mean, Hillary Clinton has, according to polls, a decent amount of support in, for instance, the African-American community, but her and her husband supported policies like welfare, so-called reform. They supported the building out of mass prisons, what's known today now as mass incarceration, policies on criminal justice that have disproportionately harmed the African-American community. So I think you might get a very interesting exchange between Sanders and Clinton on criminal justice, on Wall Street reform. And I'm curious to see if for instance, the Wall Street bailout. I mean, that is still an issue that inspires a lot of passion on both sides, and it is a point of discrepancy between Clinton and Sanders. Clinton voted for the Wall Street bailout. Sanders voted against it. I expect that may come up, and I expect you may hear from Hillary Clinton that the bailout supposedly worked and saved the economy, and it will be interesting to see then, if that comes up, how voters will react to both of those arguments.
And Peter, what would you add to that?
Well, Bernie Sanders has been talking about raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour. Hillary Clinton hasn't come there, although he's pushed her to the left on that issue, as well as the Keystone Pipeline and other issues. I agree with David that Wall Street is important. Bob Reich had a really good column you can find online called Hillary, Bernie, and the Banks to point out exactly what David said, which is that Bernie Sanders would like to reinstate the Glass-Steagall law and toughen regulations on Wall Street. There are still millions of Americans who are underwater in their home mortgages, meaning that they're in deep debt because of the housing crash. And they may not know what Glass-Steagall is, but they understand they got ripped off somehow by banks, and a lot of Americans are still reeling from the banking crisis. I think that we're still living in an era where the 1% idea, the idea that there's a handful of people at the top who control the country and control the economy and have too much influence in politics, is an important issue. And I think Bernie Sanders is going to keep talking about that. And I'm not sure Hillary Clinton can talk about it as persuasively or as convincingly. And so I think but in terms of taxing the super rich, the polls show that the vast majority of Americans, including Republicans, are in favor of higher taxes on the super rich. And so I think that issue is going to come up. But I think ultimately the issue that's going to – the foreign policy will be an issue. The tax system will be an issue. The banking question will be an issue. Gay rights, Bernie Sanders, when he was mayor of Burlington, Vermont, sponsored a resolution in favor of same-sex marriage. That was 30 years ago, and Hillary Clinton just came around at that a couple years ago. So I think Bernie Sanders cut his teeth as a civil rights activist. He got arrested in the first time for a civil rights demonstration when he was a student in college. So I think Bernie's going to try to show that he's been consistent for 40 years on these issues, and he's going to challenge Hillary Clinton on some of this in a polite way. And I think part of it is going to be the question of authenticity or how genuine they are. And I think Hillary's vulnerable on that because of some of the wishy-washiness in her policies over the years.
And we'll talk about that in just a couple minutes. But to stay on Bernie Sanders, we have a foreign policy question from Ruth Ann in El Cerrito. Hi, Ruth Ann. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks so much for having this. I was wondering what the guests thought about criticism of, if it's even going to come up, Bernie Sanders' lack of really consistent foreign policy, and particularly it's come up with Israel-Palestine.
Right, so that's gotten a lot of attention. So I wanted to look at his page to see if there was anything on it. And here's what I found under Israel-Palestine. Excuse me, this is according to Senator Sanders' webpage. It says he's long supported a two-state solution. The most recent violence in Gaza represented a particularly ugly and violent time in the dispute. Senator Sanders strongly condemned indiscriminate rocket fire by Hamas into Israeli territory and Hamas's use of civilian neighborhoods to launch those attacks. However, while recognizing that Israel has the right to defend itself, Bernie Sanders also strongly condemned Israeli attacks on Gaza as disproportionate and the widespread killing of civilians as completely unacceptable. It goes on to say, and again, this is directly from Bernie Sanders' website, the U.S. must play a leading role in creating a two-state solution. The Palestinians must unequivocally recognize Israel's right to exist and hold accountable those who've committed terrorist acts. The Israelis must end the blockade of Gaza and cease developing settlements on Palestinian land. So that's what it says on Israel-Palestine. He doesn't really talk about this much on the campaign trail. But, Peter, he has been criticized by many for not really talking about U.S. foreign policy, especially Israel and Palestine.
Well, you know, Hillary Clinton has a long track record now, having been Secretary of State on foreign policy. Some of that resonates well with the American people, and some of it doesn't. And, you know, she's not a defender of U.S. imperialism in general, but she's definitely been on the cutting edge or the front lines of a lot of decisions which Americans don't agree with on foreign policy, including, you know, the role of the United States around the world in expanding military bases and so forth. And Bernie Sanders has not been on any committees in the Senate, which would give him a platform to talk about that. So he doesn't have as much of a track record on foreign policy issues. He has been an incredibly strong advocate for veterans. And he often says on the campaign trail, if we're going to send our American young men and women to war, we ought to support them when they come home. He's been a very strong advocate of strengthening and expanding the Veterans Administration and so forth. And so that's where he sort of weighed in on that issue. So I do think he's got on his website and in some of his speeches, he's now been talking more about foreign policy. But tonight he's going to have to introduce himself as someone who can compete with Hillary Clinton about issues of foreign policy and be somewhat critical of her role as Secretary of State without personally attacking her. There's a book by Jonathan Tessini that came out a couple weeks ago called The Essential Bernie Sanders, which outlines his issues and his views on a whole lot of issues and his track record, which you know, your listeners could get if they want to learn more about where he stands.
And anything else to add there on David? How different is Bernie Sanders' foreign policy from the Obama administration?
Well, look, I think that Bernie Sanders has not made foreign policy a focus of his career. He just hasn't. I mean, he's focused primarily on economics. I will say one exception to that is that if you include international trade agreements as a form of foreign policy, which certainly, according to State Department cables under Hillary Clinton, certainly she does, then Bernie Sanders has been quite active on foreign policy in terms of opposing international trade deals, which he sees as too tilted towards corporations. But in terms of traditional foreign policy, when it comes to issues like the Middle East, he just hasn't made that one of the central focuses of his career. Now, that's not to say that he's running for president and not trying to not talk about that. I think he fundamentally understands that a president, that's a huge part of the responsibility of being president. And I think on the Israel-Palestine question, he has staked out a position that is a nuanced position on a nuanced issue in which many people on both sides, I should add, want to see it as a crystal clear black and white issue. I think we have a situation, and by the way, it's not unlike a lot of other issues in our politics. We have a situation where a nuanced, complex issue, you have folks on both sides who want it to be seen as a kind of with us or against us kind of paradigm. And I think what has led to dissatisfaction from some folks about Bernie Sanders' position on that is that he has staked out a position that is not a with us or against us kind of position. He has staked out a nuanced position. I think he has also staked out a relatively nuanced position, for instance, on the issue of gun control. And so I think that in today's politics, what we need to understand is that those are particularly difficult positions for all people running for office to stake out in a way that that is seen as acceptable to people on potentially both sides of issues. So do I think that's going to be a major issue or a major obstacle for instance, Bernie Sanders, the Israel-Palestine question? I don't, primarily because Hillary Clinton has staked out just as hard-edged, if not a harder-edged position on the same question in terms of folks who would like to see the U.S. push Israel to be more accepting of the Palestinians and a two-state solution.
And also, Bernie Sanders was asked about drones on Meet the Press recently. He says that they have the potential to be terrible and counterproductive. When Chuck Todd said, but you're comfortable with the idea of using drones if you think you've isolated an important terrorist, Bernie Sanders said yes. That interview also discussed gun control. There's been a lot of talk about Bernie Sanders and gun control, and we're currently looking up to see if Bernie Sanders has received any money from the NRA, and hopefully we can find that by the end of the show. And to stick with foreign policy, David, the Hillary Clinton emails are getting so much attention, but the substance of those emails is not really getting much. She has handed over 55,000 pages of her emails to the State Department, and you have looked through some of them. What do they reveal about her foreign policy? You report that in a 2011 speech, Hillary Clinton said, quote, it's time for the United States to start thinking of Iraq as a business opportunity, end quote. And this quote was included in an email released by the State Department that specifically mentioned J.P. Morgan and ExxonMobil.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, I think a lot of the emails just show the regular workings of the State Department and what the State Department fundamentally does, which is in many cases simply advocate for the interests of American businesses. And I think that at times, for as the example that you highlight shows, at times that can be a pretty hard-edged. Hillary Clinton advocating for Iraq to be seen as a business opportunity for American corporations, it is, some people will read that to see a confirmation of their suspicion that the Iraq war was not really about national security, was not really about a humanitarian mission, but was instead about opening up a then-closed market and a potentially lucrative market. I think a lot of the emails show us how involved Hillary Clinton was in running the State Department on a day-to-day basis. One thing that I've been fascinated by as a reporter reporting on all this is that there seems to be an incongruent argument being made about her time at the State Department, which is her supporters seem to suggest that anything that Democratic voters wouldn't like that her State Department did was simply a product of her being ordered to do it by the Obama administration, but anything that she did that Democratic primary voters do like are apparently solely the responsibility of Hillary Clinton and should be credited to Hillary Clinton. I think that fundamentally misunderstands how the State Department runs as elucidated by those emails. One example of this is you see we did a big story about how secret State Department cables leaked from WikiLeaks showed that the Clinton State Department was deeply involved in pushing the so-called Trans-Pacific Partnership, this 12-nation trade deal that a lot of core Democratic voters, labor officials, do not like and oppose. And she has only recently said that she now doesn't support the Trans-Pacific Partnership, that her own State Department and she herself were actively promoting to governments and people across the world, as those cables highlight. And what you've seen in the pushback to that is some Clinton supporters said, oh, well, she just supported the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, because that was President Obama's trade deal, and she was just ordered to do it. That doesn't explain 45 separate speeches promoting it. That doesn't explain the very deep involvement of her top aides in working with governments to push that trade deal. And I think in the debate, if that ends up being Hillary Clinton's explanation for things that core Democratic voters don't like about what happened at the State Department when she was running the State Department, I think it will promote a pretty weak image of Hillary Clinton as simply an order taker, and I don't think it will help deal with the trustworthiness factor that the polls show she is facing. I think it's hard to try to say I ran the State Department, but I really didn't run the State Department. And I think she's probably shrewd enough, not herself, to air that argument, but I think it's quite a dangerous argument coming from for her politically, coming from some of her supporters.
Well, hopefully that will be addressed at tonight's debate. And I wanted to ask both of you, we've got just a couple minutes left, is there anything else you want to point out about the other three that will be on stage tonight? Martin O'Malley, he's been slamming the DNC for not scheduling more debates. He has supported the legalization of same-sex marriage, increased taxes on the wealthy. And then you've got Lincoln Chafee. He was the only Republican senator to oppose the Iraq War. He left the party in 2006, and then he was elected governor as an independent. He is expected to talk about Clinton's vote in favor of the Iraq war tonight. He's also been talking about the Middle East on the campaign trail. Jim Webb is expected to also talk about Clinton's vote. Anything else you want to talk about just briefly of the other three candidates, Peter?
Well, I think the other three candidates will target Hillary, and that can only help Sanders. O'Malley will try to position himself to the left of Hillary, but and will attack her from that. And the other two, it's unclear where they'll go. Webb will try to be more of a centrist, and as you said, attack her on foreign policy. I think the other remaining questions we haven't addressed, there's two of them. One is you mentioned gun control, and I think it's fair to say that Bernie Sanders has not been the strongest on gun control in his career, but he's got a terrible ranking from the National Rifle Association on almost all the key issues on gun control. He's voted for strong gun control. The one time he didn't is where he's getting a lot of heat, and that was he voted against a bill many years ago that gave gun manufacturers legal immunity from civil litigation. And the other day on Meet the Press, he sort of backtracked on that and said, I'd be willing to consider that again. And so that's where he's gotten a lot of criticism. That one vote that he took has given him the image that he's been weak on gun control, when in fact he's been quite strong.
Was that the Brady bill?
Well, you know, he's changed his view on that, too. So, you know, in other words, he's taken, you know, positions that reflected the rural, mostly rural constituency he represents in Vermont. But he's got, you know, I think he's got a D record from the National Rifle Association. So he, on most of the issues they care about, he's not been on their side. The other thing I think we need to look for, it won't happen on the debate tonight, but it can happen virally through through emails and social media, is whether the Clinton campaign will try to do to Bernie what they tried to do to Obama, which is to red bait him, to, you know, to call him an extremist and a radical. And this is what Sidney Blumenthal did 8 years ago. I wrote a big piece 8 years ago in the Huffington Post where I pointed out that Sid Blumenthal was using right-wing sources to attack Obama's connections to allegedly left-wing, radical, even communist people. And it was all baloney, but and I don't think it had much of an impact. But with Bernie, it could make a difference. And so, you know, a couple of weeks ago, Claire McCaskill called Bernie Sanders an extremist on TV.
Right, and she's a big Hillary Clinton supporter. And Well,
that won't happen tonight, but that'll happen probably the next couple of months if the campaign gets tighter.
Peter Dreyer is professor of politics and chair of the Urban and Environmental Policy Department at Occidental College, and David Sirota was just named editor-in-chief of the International Business Times Political Capital. It's a new money and politics reporting project. Thank you both for joining us.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. How are young people tackling environmental issues? On the next Your Call, we'll speak with three of this year's Brower Youth Award winners. To date, 92 young environmentalists have been honored for their leadership and innovation. From saving the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta and working to green a high school, to campaigning for green spaces and urban gardens, this year's winners are creatively confronting major environmental issues. So what can we learn from today's young environmentalists? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you.
And that is on tomorrow's Your Call, 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, here on KLW.